AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
The big green leafy flag is out for this year's crop tour, and we'll have full coverage this week of what tour leaders and scouts are finding out there between the rows. Will they need sunscreen or galoshes this year? Maybe both. We'll take a first-hand look at the corn and soybean crops as we try to inject more certainty into the uncertainty. Live from Crop Tour Day 1 via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll check in with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady somewhere on the eastern leg of the tour. Later, our very own beloved host Chip Flory checks in from the wild, wild western leg. Right after the news, the gang from BAMWX checks in. I'm the handsome newsman Davis Michelson, keeping her out of the rhubarb. Welcome to AgriTalk. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. The much-anticipated crop tour is underway. And if you haven't been a part of this, it's a humongous week for Pro Farmer and for Farm Journal. We're really taking the boots on the ground, the dusty boots approach, very, very seriously this year because, you know, we want to go out and gather our own numbers. We've gathered opinions from farmers throughout the growing season thus far here at Pro Farmer. We've, as you well know, both on this show and at Pro Farmer, and among the analysts that we speak with, we've been watching the USDA numbers very, very carefully. It is important to understand that this is Pro Farmer's efforts to make their own opinion. Editor Brian Grady is always extremely clear that he doesn't want to go in with preconceived notions. He doesn't want to go in and say, well, we're going, you know, comparisons to USDA numbers aside, none of that really matters at this point because they are out in the fields right now. They've got dew on their pant legs, the toes of their boots maybe already soaked through to their socks. You know, we're underway here and excited to see what this crop is going to tell us from our perspective with all other voices quieted for this one week. It's very exciting. And you know, it's not Pro Farmer's first rodeo doing this crop tour thing. I don't know, it's 20 some years. I'll ask Chip how long they've been at it, but it's been a long time. I think I was still in grammar school when the first crop tour got underway. That may or may not be right. I don't know. I'll check with Chip on that later. So we'll talk with Brian in the next segment, and then later on the show, Chip and I will talk, and we'll get his thoughts. We'll get some things clarified. Day one, so we won't have any specific results to report, but as the week goes on and as those numbers do come in, I'm more than happy to share those with you, and then we'll get reflections from both Brian Grady and Chip Flory and scouts along the way on what they've seen, what those numbers mean to them, and this sort of thing. So it's all very exciting. I'm glad that you've tuned in. And, of course, we got to check in with the gang from BAMWX on the weather right after this news. Yeah, let's go ahead and get to the news. Corn futures ended the overnight session narrowly mixed. Soybean and wheat futures slightly firmer at the open. Corn futures favored a weaker tone, while soybeans and wheat futures continued higher. Cattle futures mixed on the open with nearbys under pressure and deferreds slightly higher. Lean hog futures mostly higher. Now, futures are pointing to muted losses for major U.S. equities that closed at record highs last week after data showed a slowdown in China's economy as the highly infectious Delta variant has taken a toll on China's recovery. The Biden administration has revised the nutrition standards of the food stamp program and prompted the largest permanent increase to benefits in the program's history. That's a move that adds billions of dollars to the cost of a program that feeds 1 in 8 Americans. Now, the rules will be put in place in October, with average benefits rising more than 2% from pre-pandemic levels. All 42 million people in the program will receive additional aid. And the saga continues. In a Dear Colleague letter to House Democrats, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said she, quote, requested that the Rules Committee explore the possibility of a rule that advances both the budget resolution and the bipartisan infrastructure package, end quote. The move is being made to deal with 9 centrist House Democrats demanding a timely vote on the infrastructure package to get their support. Quote, our goal is to pass the budget resolution the week of August 23 so that we may pass Democrats' Build Back Better agenda as fast as possible, Pelosi wrote, using the name for Biden's overall economic plans. She said the initial procedural vote she wants the House to take, quote, will push us on a path to advance both the infrastructure and the social and environment measures. America's top general said Sunday that the United States could now face a rise in terrorist threats from a Taliban-run Afghanistan. The Taliban entered the capital city of Kabul, effectively sealing the insurgency's swift takeover of Afghanistan, this 2 decades after the U.S. invaded. The U.S. State Department said that it was working to secure control of the airport, with core employees moved to a military-controlled section there. Meanwhile, thousands of other U.S. citizens and Afghans who aided the U.S. military are still in the country. And the U.S. International Trade Commission voted unanimously Friday to continue its investigation into imports of urea ammonium nitrate fertilizer from Russia and Trinidad and Tobago, which are allegedly subsidized and sold into the U.S. at less than fair value. And finally, Tropical Storm Fred could make landfall near Destin, Florida today or this evening. Damage to crops could be limited due to the storm's weak intensity. The weather, the flux of moisture into the central U.S. could set the stage for more rain in the U.S. plains and Canadian prairies late this week, though Tropical Depression Grace could interfere. Michael Clark from BAMWX, what do you make of Tropical Storm Fred, baby?
Yeah, you know, I think it could bring some moisture into the Tennessee Valley, lower Ohio Valley area. It'll really be weakening pretty drastically as it comes in, but back to your original comment about rains in the central and northern plains, that is certainly going to be a welcome change here over the next 7 to 10 days.
All right, very good. Well, let's talk about the next couple of days anyway. We've got scouts out on the tour. Are we talking sunscreen or galoshes?
it's pretty nice out there right now, but it's going to warm up. The overnight American data really dried up the rain risks in Iowa and southern Minnesota. A little concerning there. And hit or miss chances are going to be further east. But back into the central and northern plains, I definitely think the chances for rain will be on the increase, especially here mid to late week. So a little bit of a mixed bag, you know. It could be wet northwest, dry central, and wet east.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we're keeping a really close eye on the precipitation in some areas where soybeans are growing that desperately need a rain. Anything for those folks?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think, you know, a lot of Iowa, southern Minnesota, I'm concerned with. A large chunk of the ag belt the last 30 days has really been at or below 50% of the normal rainfall. So a lot of folks really need a good timely rain right now. The best location for that is going to come up in the far northern plains, believe it or not, up and through the Great Lakes. So,
all right.
That's kind of the shot of it right now.
Outstanding. Well, thank you very much, Michael Clark from BAMWX, checking in on the weather. All right, we are underway. I've got Brian Grady standing by on the eastern leg of the tour, somewhere in Ohio-ish, I think. We'll find out exactly where he's at. We'll get him zeroed and find out what he's seeing so far on this morning's Crop Tour. Find farm equipment on Machina Repeats August 17 online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinarepeat.com.
Is a ripper part of your cropping plan? A deep ripper pass can manage residue, reset soil density, and level the soil surface. While most rippers look like they're doing a good job on top of the ground, you have to do a little digging to see if your ripper is really doing the job. Conventional ripper points leave about 40% of the subsoil undisturbed. Dig between the ripper shanks and you'll find large mounds of untouched soil. These dense berms of soil can limit root growth and limit access to nutrients buried in the berm. Hi, I'm Greg Souter from 360 Yield Center. I was surprised at the amount of undisturbed soil I found when digging behind our 875 ripper. That's when we went to work developing a better ripper point. one that could fracture the complete soil profile. The result is 360 bullet ripper point. It's a wide wing point, 14 inches wide, with the wing position low. That provides a maximum lift and shatter, enough to fracture from point to point, leaving virtually no berm or mounds. And even though the 360 bullet fractures more soil than traditional points, its unique wing position and wing angle pulls about much more horsepower or fuel. You get almost twice as much work done without much increase in cost. And another cost saving? These points last. The Heavy Duty Plus Ripper Point has hardened steel plates fused to a cast chrome steel base. That combination provides strength and high wear even in tough soil conditions. If you've been shopping for equipment or parts, you know things are getting hard to find. Well, we're happy to say that we have a great supply of 360 bullets ready for you this fall. Talk to your 360 Yield Center dealer to get a set of 360 bullets. They're available for most disc ripper makes and models. You can see the 360 bullet ripper points in action at 360yieldcenter.com.
Machine Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com and call 888-996-7801.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk. Glad that you've chosen to join us this morning. We are beginning our annual coverage of Pro Farmers Crop Tour. Right now, joining me from the Eastern Leg, Tour Director and Editor of Pro Farmer, Mr. Brian Grady. Brian, how's it going, buddy?
Good, Davis.
Glad to hear from you. Glad to hear from you. Where are you located at this moment in time?
I'm in northern Ohio, so I had a route that went north out of Dublin and then cut across the far northern tiers of counties. So our farthest route north in the state of Ohio.
Okay, very good, very good. There were some pretty decent expectations, at least from what we've heard from farmers. Some decent rains out there. It sounded like pretty okay growing conditions for the Eastern Belt, at least as compared to in the Western Belt. What has your experience been? What's the health of the corn and soybean crops just generally along your route thus far today?
Well, we got wet. It was raining when we left the hotel this morning, and it's rained on us up until about 20 minutes or half an hour ago, somewhere around in there. So, we've some pretty good based on the, you know, we saw a little bit of ponding in some of the fields and things like that here in northern Ohio. So they got don't know the amounts, but pretty solid rains overnight and early this morning here in this area.
Now, I guess it would be scattered across the Eastern Belt, but I wonder if you've seen any signs of maybe nitrogen loss or some you know, stress from too much moisture on that crop out there.
Yeah, not a whole lot, to be honest with you. I mean, most of what we've seen, we'd stop every 15 miles randomly along the route, but we make observations as we drive in other areas and aren't taking samples. And you can, you know, see some fields with some ponding and stuff like that, where maybe the soybeans, just ponded out a little bit of area, so a little bit of excessive rainfall at some point. But, all in all, this looks pretty solid. The plant health is pretty good for both corn and soybeans from what I've seen on my route so far. And good solid yields coming off the corn yield samples that we pulled. We did have one clunker that the ear count was lighter, the grain length was much less. Some of the fields have showed a little bit of tip back on the very end of the ears. All in all, for Ohio, they're kind of a hit and miss state always, pretty solid corn from what we've seen here so far this morning along my route.
I know that you like to see a nice, consistent sort of stand. You like those beans when you look out across the top to just look like a carpet.
Are you encountering that out there so far today?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. You know, we're seeing a little bit of volunteer corn here and there, some water hemp issues here and there, but generally the beans are pretty clean, I would say. You know, nothing that's too significant from that standpoint, I wouldn't say at this point, from my observations anyway.
Very good, very good. Well, it's early in the week, and so we won't expect to get any calculations really necessarily, but are there some numbers that you could throw at us at this point, or is it too soon in the day so far?
Well, I can give you some numbers off our route. You know, keep in mind I'm one of 11, 12 routes that are running out here. But, you know, on corn, I talked about that clunker, you know, 126.5. So it was the extreme low end of what we've had. The top end was 218.8. So that was a much higher, obviously. And then most of them have been in that, let's call it 170 to 190 range. Other than that, we've made six stops so far.
Very good, very good. You know, the most recent crop condition ratings out of USDA have been pretty favorable for Ohio. I think I saw something around an 80% good to excellent, and that sounds like exactly what you're seeing there. And a 170 to 190 on the corn has got to make you feel pretty good, at least on your route. And you're quick to point out that yours is just one route, so we're getting kind of a narrow view here. But I'm feeling like you're kind of vibing on this Ohio corn crop.
Well, USDA put a record yield on Ohio corn as of August 1, so we should be seeing some pretty good corn. Record for the state, so. You know, and we're not out here to prove or disprove USDA, but, you know, the comparison's not necessarily apples to apples, but yet they'll be made by some. And so, you know, we need to, at the end of the day, figure out whether USDA is legitimate with their record yield expectations for Ohio or not. And we'll add it all up at the end of the day after we get all the samples from all the routes and see where we're at. But, from what I've seen, I've seen a whole heck of a lot worse corn in the state of Ohio. Usually it's quite a bit more variable than what it is. It seems to be a little bit more consistent this year. And really, that's one of the ways you build a big yield is, you know, the plant populations, ear counts, and the ear counts have been pretty solid so far along my route.
All right. Flip us over to beans and kind of answer the same sorts of questions there. What are your pod counts looking like? How is it shaping up?
Yeah, good solid pod counts. We had one that was just shy of 750, so that was on the low end. The rest of them have been, I mean, we had a high of 1257 in a three foot by 3 foot square.
Wow.
Most of them have been around 1,000 or so, just above 1,000. Good solid pod count coming out of state along my route.
That's outstanding. And it doesn't sound, I haven't heard you talk about any disease pressure, any bug pressure, nothing weird going on out in those beans?
No, pretty clean, like I said earlier on. Just, you know, I there's fields here and there that have some issues, but nothing too major and all in all, you know, good solid crops. A lot of times you're out here in Ohio, and because of the soils, they just don't hold the moisture the same way they do in the central corn belt. And you'd see stress and those types of things. We haven't seen a whole lot of that, to be honest with you. It just, you know, it kind of doesn't really look like your typical Ohio corn and soybean crops so far.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned earlier that your observations and what you've given us here thus far have been just from your route, a number of routes running on that eastern leg. Talk to me about the folks you've got along there with you. How many scouts have you gathered? And as I recall, it's in years past, you've kind of had an international presence as well. Talk to me about your scouts.
Yeah, we don't have the international scouts this year because of COVID. So,
sure.
You know,
okay.
We didn't allow them to go along. So it's, you know, all American based scouts. We've got 11 teams out or 11 routes out there, but only four of ours are full routes. The rest are split. So we have multiple teams participating and good numbers, really good scouts, knowledgeable scouts, and you know, they're out there ripping out the samples this morning for me.
Very good. So you've got a pretty decent level of experience out there among those scouts, and that's got to boil down to just good, solid data. Fair statement?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not rocket science to get the data out of the field, you know, but it's the observations that the experience gives you beyond just the numbers coming out of the field, what you see when you're out there, you know, if there is an issue, why, what caused it, and you know, those types of things. Where the experienced scouts come into play.
Now, I've asked you this question in a different way before, and I'm going to try and trick you into answering it this way. It's clear that this crop tour is a discovery process. It's termed sort of how much of the production factory is up and running and at what level. You've shied away from expectations before because I know you want to go in with a clear head. You don't want to try and impose your own thoughts on this crop here. But throughout the rest of the day, do you have a sense? Are you expecting to see more of what you've seen so far today, or do you expect maybe you'd hit a change at some point?
No, you know, I mean, when you look at the Eastern Corn Belt as a whole, USDA put record yields in Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. So as we start out here and make our way west through the week, we should continue to see really good crops. If we aren't seeing that record level of yield potential out here, then there's probably an issue. And so we anticipate that we'll see really good crops. It's going to be in stark contrast to some of the observations that are coming from the western leg, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Just because they've dealt with more moisture stress and those types of issues.
Outstanding. Brian Grady, be safe for the rest of the day. We'll talk to you later this afternoon on AgriTalk.
All right.
From August 23rd through the 27th, your Farm Journal Field Days in-person experience will take you on the road to live events at America's top farms. Can't join in person? Register for the online portion to network with fellow farmers online and find original content for every segment of agriculture. No matter how you spend your time at Farm Journal Field Days, you're guaranteed a great time. There's a lot more to know about this week-long event, so visit farmjournalfielddays.com today.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, a blast from the past, Mr. Dan Vaught from Pro Farmer. Dan, good morning, sir. How are you?
Okay. Davis, how do you do?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. We're so glad to have you this week for very special coverage of Crop Tour here. Look, dude, we came out of the overnight session with wheat headed to the upside, soybeans looking pretty sharp, and corn off just slightly, but now wheat has taken a turn to the minus side. What can you tell us?
I think these markets are really just kind of taking a pause after having put in such big gains late last week. You know, really hadn't been a great deal of fresh news over the weekend. The beans did get a boost from the news of another announced sale, 132,000 metric tons to unknown destination. I think, though, that the market was looking for a similar announcement from China. So I think that's one reason why the beans aren't doing better. And as I said, you know, the grains and cotton are all kind of just slipping a bit, taking a pause after breaking out last week.
Well, and I've been watching this relationship between the feeder cattle market and the corn market. And usually it's, you know, corn down, feeders up. But now we've got feeder cattle under pressure as corn is falling.
Yeah, I think that's a reflection of the weakness in the back end of live cattle market. The nearby cattle contracts are up. The October's up 67 or so, 128.12, but the back months are down. I think the market's kind of worried about how well the cattle market's going to participate in the big beef rally.
Very good. And lean hog futures up slightly on the day. That's Dan Vaught.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Ah, Davis Michelson here, and it's so great that we're bumping this music because finally my opinion can be made known that this song is no longer for me. This song could only be possible on one's 30th birthday, and that's the final word. I think debate has been closed on the matter. We're talking crop tour now, and calling all the way in from the western leg of the peanut gallery, our own beloved host, Chip Flory. Chip, you somehow got roped into directing the western leg of the tour this year, and doggone it, your insights are priceless year after year, and we're so glad to have you out there. How's it going, buddy? How's your day so far?
It's going real fine. I'm driving down the road with my daughter, Emily, and we're pulling corn and soybean samples
up
in South Dakota. So, yeah, things are going great.
Very good. Very good. So, Brian, I was just talking to him, and the big question coming into the show today was, are we looking at sunscreen or galoshes? Brian has needed his galoshes since he stepped out of his room this morning. What's the situation there where you're at right now?
Yeah, no galoshes necessary. There was a light wind all night, in that 5-mile-an-hour range, something like that. And as a result, we didn't even have to deal with much dew this morning when we got started. Mm-hmm. It was it has been a very, very nice morning out here. 75 degrees, little breeze blowing. It does not feel like Western. It does not feel like the third week of August in Southern South Dakota. That's for sure. Yeah.
So you started in Sioux Falls. Have I got that right? And then just sort of shot southward?
No, nope. Emily and I, we had to make our way to the west and then north before coming back down through Mitchell and making our way down into, right now, we just got into Douglas County.
Okay.
So we've got a couple of more stops to make here in South Dakota. We split a route with Master Scout Brad Nelson, who's been on the Farmer Forum with us several times. And so we've got the South Dakota part. Brad's taking the Nebraska part, and we should pull a fair number of samples. I've already been in 6 fields here this morning, Davis, I feel like we're getting a good idea. And, you know, just so that everybody kind of understands, I'm kind of on the northern and western edge of the intensive corn and soybean area in South Dakota. It is not unusual to drive for 6-8 miles and see nothing but pasture and rangeland. Mm-hmm. But then you get into these pockets where corn and soybeans are every mile down the road. Yeah.
Now, one thing that I was talking to Brian about on the east side, I was asking him if he's seen any signs of moisture stress over there on that side. He said he'd seen a little bit of ponding just from these, you know, these most recent rains, the end of which he encountered this morning. He wasn't seeing a whole lot of sign of moisture stress just in general.
Right.
I've got to ask you the opposite question. Are you seeing signs of stress from that ongoing dryness, that heat that they had over there in the western belt? What's the sitch there?
Yeah, we've seen a couple of our corn samples have shown us some of the early stress, that June stress. Okay, and the way that we're kind of checking that off is with the number of kernel rows around the ear. We're typically going to average very close to 16 when we come out of a field, and 16 is kind of the gold standard. That's what we're aiming for. If we get some 18s, maybe we're starting to give up some kernel size, but I'm not going to turn away the 18s. You get into the 20s and you're definitely giving up kernel size. You like to think that maybe you're going to pick up kernel size when you get below 16, but we've had a couple of samples with the 14 kernel row ears, and I've not been real impressed with the kernel size either. I will tell you this, Davis, we are measuring yield up here. And I really didn't expect that. And the reason that I say that is because we're looking at corn that's in the dense stage and it's been pushed. It's been pushed. I don't think there's any question about that.
Now,
go ahead.
Did it go in early or has it been pushed?
It went in on time, maybe a little bit early, maybe a little bit early, but generally speaking, I would say that it was on time plantings up here, 5 days early in some cases, but it was generally on time. So I think the heat rushed it from germination to pollination. And then you like to slow things down a little bit if you can. And I don't think we slowed it down. It feels like this crop has been pushed along by the dry conditions. It's been pushed along by some of the heat. It's not unusual or even all that concerning for me to see a corn crop in the dough stage in South Dakota at this time.
Okay.
And to see that it is mostly dented, and it's not a hard dent, guys. It's not a hard dent, but it is dented, and that suggests to me that we are shortening up that kernel fill period.
Well, can I ask you to talk a few numbers? And I know that there are a number of routes running in that vicinity right now.
Right, we've got 10 routes out here.
Yep. Let's talk some numbers just from what you've seen just so far today. You said you pulled, what, 6 samples today so far?
We're pulling our 6th sample right now.
You're pulling a sample right now? This is action news as it happens?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's Emily. Emily's doing it. I'm sitting in the air-conditioned car.
Good work, Emily. All right. No, you got the perfect setup there, baby.
We're looking at 125, 125, 157, 115, 148. So, yeah, it's going to be something in that 140 range.
And that's not,
for an
that's
average
not terrible.
Almost so far. No, no, it's not. No, it's not. And Davis, the lowest, that 115 had a kernel row count of 13.3 on average, but 14.67, 16.67, 13.3 and a 14 on our average kernel rows.
Okay.
Can you imagine if we had 2 more kernel rows on average on those? That would give you the difference between what we see in a good year out here and what we're seeing right now. It's not a terrible number that we're pulling, but it's not great. We've pulled a lot of 170 and 180 bushel yields in this part of the state. And then the northern and western areas pull the state's average down, in a good year. That could happen again this year, but we're not pulling those big numbers on my route. We're not pulling those big numbers that are gonna, make for some eye pop in South Dakota yield numbers. It just isn't happening.
Right. All right. Well, flip us over to beans. Would imagine that you are excited about the Nebraska bean crop because you have this weird affection for Nebraska soybeans. I don't know. Whatever.
That's kind of an obsession.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's fine.
Okay.
Talk to me about the beans that you've seen so far today.
Okay. Now, all season, for the last 6 weeks, I keep getting these comments in from growers. Well, honestly, this corn crop looks better than what I thought it was based on the amount of rain. Honestly, this bean crop looks better based on the amount of rain. The bean crop really looks good.
Huh?
And then it doesn't for a stretch. And then it picks up and you see some of those timely rains and you think about how scattered the rains have been and especially how scattered the beneficial rains have been in South Dakota. The popcorn shower, somebody might pick up a tenth of an inch and it looks like, you know, it's green on the radar and everything must be going okay. But it, you end up with a tenth of an inch when 2 miles down the road, they end up with an inch and a tenth. Mm-hmm. And you can see that variability in the bean crop as you're driving by. And we've been in a couple of fields that showed us that moisture stress and pod counts, you know, under 700 in a couple of those fields. And then the one field that I walked out of feeling really good, thinking, boy, that was a 50 bushel bean field that I was just in, was up around 1450 pods. Oh, in wow. a 3x3 foot square. So that was a good mm-hmm. South Dakota bean field, but it feels like it's going to be real. It needs water. That's for sure. Everything on our moisture scale so far has indicated very dry conditions, and it needs water to finish. Now the maturity of the beans, mm-hmm. I would say it's getting pushed there too. Because it's not like we're looking at flat beans, and maybe that might have something to do with planting date. They might have gotten this bean crop planted just a little bit earlier, so things are moving along. But it's a different bean crop, dude.
I'm very anxious to find out what that bean crop looks like when we speak with you this afternoon. Chip, it sounds like you've got a pretty decent connection there. Why don't you stick around? I want to talk to you just a little bit more through this final segment. And we'll dig more into the mind of Flory out on the western leg of Crop Tour. Right after these words, stick around. This is AgriTalk. We'll be right back. Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert, featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD-TV. Well, that's coming right up, too.
Yeah.
Farm Journal Field Days, I think that's next week.
Next week.
Yeah, that's exciting stuff. Davis Michelson here on AgriTalk with you. I've got Chip Flory live and on the ground on the western leg. A couple questions I've got for you, Chip. So you've been up in South Dakota.
Yep.
You've put your boots on the ground. Have you?
Yep.
You know, I love to hunt rocks in South Dakota. It's been it's been my obsession this summer.
It's like your favorite thing.
Have you found any keepers?
I have not found any rocks. I have not honestly been looking for said rocks. Mm-hmm. I have seen pheasants and I've heard pheasants.
Oh,
that makes
okay.
me happy.
I have no doubt. Well, you know, and rock hunting takes a very discriminating geological mind.
coupled with
a sharply focused set of eyes too.
It's not for everybody.
It's not for everybody.
Gotcha.
I get it. What about, you mentioned Mitchell, and I can't help but think maybe you at least drove by the Corn Palace, paid a little homage to the Corn Palace.
You know what? We drove around it, took the bypass around.
Okay.
Sorry.
Fair enough.
Sorry, but been there before. It was tough to get by Cabela's, though. That was really difficult.
That is tough. That is tough. Your strength is inspiring to us all, brother. So I asked Brian, you know, this is a discovery process, this whole crop tour thing, you know, and Brian, as always, was very diligent in pointing out this is not about proving or disproving other people's numbers, USDA's or anybody else's.
Right.
This is about an independent, pragmatic look. There's math involved. There are spreadsheets. There's a whole process here. For those who are listening to AgriTalk and maybe haven't been a part of our coverage of Crop Tour before, can you just talk to me about the process and how it actually works?
Yeah, sure. A couple of things to keep in mind here. We do things consistently and we do things by random. Including those two things, it gives us a representative sample of what we're looking at in crop districts. That's about as small as I like to break it down, is into the crop districts. Mm-hmm. It, what we're looking at in the state and what we're looking at in the seven state area. When we get all done on Thursday night, the most important number that we will look at is the all sample average for corn. So put all 1500 plus samples into one spreadsheet, run the calculation, and determine what that one average yield number. And that's really what we're out here trying to do. We're not trying to peg a yield in a field. We are out here trying to pull 1500 samples from one big field that stretches from Ohio to South Dakota. Mm-hmm. Now the randomness comes into play this way, Davis. We run the same routes every year that we're out here. That's consistency, but we don't tell our scouts where to stop. We just say stop every 15 to 20 miles where you can get safely off the road. And once we get into the soybean field, we get to a quote unquote representative spot and we measure off 3 foot of row, count all the plants in that 3 foot of row, select 3 plants at random, count all the pods on the 3 plants, and then determine the average number of pods per plant. Once we've done that, then we can take it times the number of plants in the row to give us the total number of pods in 3 foot of row. The problem with stopping there is that you can't compare a 30-inch bean row to a 20, to a 15, to a 7.5 drilled. So if you take the total number of pods in 3 foot of row times 36 and divide by the row width, we've now calculated the number of pods in a 3 by 3 foot square. So it doesn't matter what the row width is in a field. Now we can compare year to year and field to field on what the pod fill is. In the cornfields, we get past the end rows, get at least, a lot of times we're going to go about 48 rows in if we feel like we are going against the end rows. If that's the case, once we get to the main rows, then we go another 35 paces in. We've all got a 30-foot rope with us. We hook it at the bottom of a corn stalk, stretch out that 30-foot rope, and then count all the years on 2 rows that will make grain. We're not counting plants. We're not counting, blanks. We are counting ears that will make grain. And then we pull the 5th, the 8th, and the 11th ear. So we end up at a spot by random, but to keep it consistent, 30 foot of row, count it twice, and pull the 58th and the 11th ear from one of those rows. From there, we count the kernel rows around, we measure the grain length in inches, and that gives us the information that we need to calculate a yield. So we do it the same way year to year, mm-hmm. and we do it randomly while we're on tour, and that gives us a representative sample of the corn and soybean crop potential.
How many years is this now?
Well, for Pro Farmer, this is the 29th year.
29?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. For me, since I was on it before I was a director, so I need to add 4 years to that. So this would be my 33rd.
33 years. Wow. Wow. Yep. So this is nothing new to you. And when you talk about those year-to-year comparisons, when you talk about the consistently random samples, you're speaking from experience, and that's really what we need to get a really, really good, clear picture and to be able to put these numbers together. I'm back here, and I'll be processing some of those numbers and putting them into a spreadsheet and making absolute solid gold radio with any luck at all. Chip, I'm so glad that you're underway. I'm so glad to hear from you. We'll talk again later on this afternoon, pal. What do you say?
Perfect. Sounds great. We'll talk then.
Outstanding. That was Chip Flory. I'm Davis Michelson with Crop Tour Coverage Day 1. We'll find out where they're at this afternoon later on. If you'll only tune in, I hope you do.